everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Constructive Criticism. I'm your host, Spencer, a two-time state champion, and I am joined by my co-host, a one-time state champion, Michael Hinderocker.
Thanks, Spencer. That's the nicest thing anyone's ever said about me.
Yeah, and we are joined by GP Top 8 competitor, which neither of us can claim, Jadine. How's it going, Jadine? I actually don't know how to say your last name, so I didn't want to mess it up.
You pretend there's a T at the end and just say parents, and nobody ever hears that there's not a T, so it's Clown Parents.
Oh, interest. Do people have Utah accents where you're from, too?
Utah accents? No.
Yeah, I mean, Utah people don't say their T's in words.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, we say mountain instead of mountain. And it's a thing.
I think that's missing the N, not the T, but...
Mountain? We can't get all into this. We can talk about the way you say the word
Q, all right, all right.
But... You know who won't mispronounce Jadine's name, though, is our sponsor at Oasis Games. You can check them out at mdgoasis.com.
It's a dicey promise, Spencer.
mdgoasis.com. You can get 15% off of your first order by using the code CCMDG at checkout. And you can get 4% off of every order by using the code WouldThatBeGood, no spaces. You can check out our other sponsor at Fusion Gaming, where you can watch Nikachu the Mason Slayer and all of his Murpho glory. You can also check out other up-and-coming content creators at the Mana Base and check out their sponsor at Fusion Gaming. You can check out the rest of the podcast on the network that's limited time only and common knowledge. And you can support Jadine by getting SCG Premium and reading her articles.
That would be great. It's great when people do that.
If you want to support the podcast directly, you can go to patreon.com/ccmdg and become a patron of the show. Our Patreon question this week is, can one of the CC podcast editors please make the podcast available on Google Play Music, Android's version of iTunes? It's really hard to keep up with the show, and I don't want to download another app just to listen to you guys. I'm assuming it's not a lurk work to get the podcast there on the regular, of course. Keep up the great work. You're one of the only two MDG podcasts I listen to regularly.
I feel like calling this a question is...
It was
interesting.
It was sent to me as a question. I actually want to give it an answer, is actually why I put it here. So, it is not hard for people who are smart, and I'm not one of those people. They need a specific layout to your RSS feed that I need to figure out, but once I figure out how to make my RSS feed work for them, I'll get it in there. I tried to submit it just like I submitted to iTunes, but it wasn't as easy as iTunes because... I mean, it shouldn't be. I mean, that's just the way life is. But yeah, we will get it there. So this is not the first person to ask me to do this. I just am lazy, and I'm sorry. Speaking about being lazy and sorry, let's move on to our first segment, which is hashtag always improving. Oh, that was good. We can't laugh at our own transitions because it's bad transitioning. But hashtag always improving is the point of this podcast. We believe if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. And we want to be doing what we can all the time to be improving, whether that's Michael chasing gold, whether that's me trying to figure out how to get into, you know, the Android version of iTunes. There's something that you can be doing to be improving at life or magic, you know, and we want to be doing those things. So, Michael, what have you done to improve at Magic the Gathering this week?
I mean, I can't say that I was very successful, but I tried twice to play online PTQs to qualify for this next Pro Tour, because, like, not having to use my silver invite would be sweet. I was unsuccessful both times. I played a bad Pride of Conquerors deck, the standard PTQ, and a good Pride of Conquerors deck won the standard PTQ, so... I had, like, you know, 4 of the 75 correct, so I felt okay about that. And in Modern, I lost the matchup lottery and did not get there either. So, a little bit of a disappointing weekend, but, you know, get back to it shortly.
Can we rewind for a second? What brought you to Pride of Conquerors, and why did you want to try that?
It's, like, really good. I don't know if you ever cast Overrun, but this is, like, 2-mana Overrun.
Yeah, that's a good rate.
Yeah, it's significantly cheaper than other things. I mean, I've played the bad side of Pride of Conquerors in Standard before, so.
Okay, so the other thing that I would say, though, about, like, if you're actually interested in this deck, it is the best Legion's Landing deck I have ever seen by an absurd margin, like, meaning the deck that won the PTQ. And that card is really, really good. No, my deck was just unequivocally bad, unapologetically bad. But the deck that won the PTQ, Legion's Landing is, like, really powerful if you're actually able to use it as an extra mana source in the early turns of the game as well.
Sure.
And that deck is able to flip it potentially on turn two if you draw double Vomac Courier, but on turn three often. And it's just pretty powerful as far as providing you extra permanence. There are some cool sequencing things you can do to have the maximum amount of permanence, like playing your second Legion's Landing only once the first one is flipped, and then casting Pride of Conquerors before combat to maximize the number of permanents you have. So there are a lot of cool little things you can do, but Legion's Landing is fantastic. So is Pride of Conquerors, so I think that's probably something worth trying if that appeals to you.
Yeah, I think that the deck does a pretty cool job of, like, getting Toolcraft Exemplar back in there. You know, Sky Marcher's Aspirant just turns into a flyer in this deck really easily. I'm a fan. Like, I think that this is the first Boros deck that I've seen that I'm like, the mana isn't the worst thing I've ever seen, and...
No, it's secretly a mono-white deck.
Right.
And basically nothing that's good against your tokens is good against Tazzeret, which is just... It means that a lot of your draws, like, your opponents have to keep in all these Vraska's Contempts in the boarded games. They'll have Golden Demise and you'll have Hazoret. Or, like, you know, some combination of Scrap Heap Scrounger and Hazoret or Vehicles and Hazoret. It's just an awkward deck to play against.
Yeah. Jadeen, I think you took 10th place at the Classic this weekend. We'll kind of get into the deck that you played. But what did you do to improve at Magic the Gathering or life in general this week?
I guess at the Open, I basically spent a lot of my free time watching Legacy. I played Modern in the Team Open and then Standard in the Classic, and basically spent all my between rounds time watching Legacy to expose myself to as much different Magic as I could.
What kind of Magic content, I mean, we'll probably get into this, but what kind of Legacy do you like to watch? What kind of things do you look for when trying to consume things to help you improve like that?
I really just feel that Magic has so many different things going on. I just don't want to let myself shoehorn in too hard on anything, which I definitely have a tendency to do. I play decks for a long time, don't switch as much as I should. So when I'm, like, watching other people play, I try and watch things that I don't normally play so that I can pick up the most.
That's good. That's good. I think that's a good frame of mind. I know that I suffer from that, too, where you just kind of force yourself into doing the same thing over and over again because it works for you rather than trying to make it so that you can do anything.
Yeah. I also find it incredibly satisfying to get, like, marginally better at the same thing, and that's just so much cooler than getting, like, 80% of the way on a new deck that I haven't played. Getting from, like, 94 to 94.5 is nice.
I agree. So for me this week, I took a little bit of a break from Magic. The only Magic I played this week was with our Patreons, for Patreon, the coaching that we do. And hit, guys, I had the best weekend. I literally did nothing, and it felt really good. And I think that I'm more excited to play Magic than I have been in a while because of doing nothing for a weekend. Sure. Michael, I mean, both of you guys probably feel this way more than I do, as you're both, you know, grinding GPs and SCGs, but sometimes you have to take that weekend off.
Oh yeah.
Around Ixalan, I think it was Phoenix, Pro Tour, Portland, RPTQ.
Yes.
Like, back to back to back to back. And by the end of that, I mean, like, actually, every single one of those events went really well, but by the end, I was still just, like, I don't think I played for, like, a week and a half.
Yeah.
I just can't pick up Magic cards for a minute.
That was the same way for me. Like, I had played so much Sealed and so much Limited and so much Modern, I had played so much Modern leading up to when I kind of talked about food poisoning, but I had played so much Magic before that, and then, like, had to, like, watch videos while I was sick, and I don't know, it was nice to just completely remove myself from Magic for a minute and give myself a chance to, like, think about things. I saw a ton of really cool decks this week. I think that the deck that won the PDQ that Michael was talking about online was, like, super sweet new addition to the metagame, so I'm really excited about Magic, and I wasn't excited about Magic on Monday, so...
Yeah, it always waxes and wanes a little bit.
Yeah.
I think that's just that's just natural.
Speaking about being excited about Magic, though, we have some announcements that have to do with the Patreon. I didn't want to make a ton of changes before the podcast aired. If you're in our Constructed Critics group, you actually know what these changes are. So here's the thing. We charge $25 a month for our coaching on Patreon, which is about 50% less than industry standard, and even more less than that for some of the higher-end coaching you can get. And I'm not going to go to industry standard, but I am raising this price to $40 a month, but I'm grandfathering in everybody who is in before I make the change. So basically, if you want to lock in $25, I will never, ever, ever raise the price on you. But the second that I change the price to 40, that's the price moving forward for everybody else. And if you leave and come back, it'll be 40 for you then. I'll grandfather everybody in that is at 25. So they'll stay at 25 forever. But we are making that change. Just because, like, I want to be able to do the things that I want to do with you, and I can't do the things that I want to do for you for $25. It's just like, it's not feasible. So I have to change that. The second thing is, in addition to that, we're actually giving the $10 patrons a new benefit. So if you are a patron of $10 or more, we will be doing a monthly Google Hangout where we will either go through a league together or we will review a league together. So basically everybody who's a $10 patron is invited. It'll be on the same day of the week or the same week of the month day. So like every fourth Wednesday, right? Or something like that. It will just be set and you can come, we'll record it and send it to all of the $10 patrons and things like that. So it's something that I'm really excited about that we're changing and giving additional stuff to those patrons. And we just kind of want to be helping people improve at Magic. But yeah, those are kind of the changes coming on Patreon, and I just wanted to be upfront about what was going on, and I'm really excited about both of the changes, because I think that it's going to let me help those people that we're coaching, and it's going to allow me to give more to those people who are donating quite a bit. Like, that's like a Netflix subscription, so I want to be able to give back. The last thing is, if you are a Constructed Critic, we are starting exclusive content. It'll probably be starting with exclusive video content, but if you are a patron of $5 or more, look forward to exclusive content in that Constructed Critics Facebook group. That's at patreon.com/ECMTG. All right, let's move on. If you are a patron of $5 or more, you get to submit a deck doctor, and we have a sweet one this week. So, Michael, why don't you go ahead and read it?
All right, so the main deck is 4 Kitesail Freebooter, 4 Gifted Aetherborn, 4 Glintsleeve Siphoner, 2 Gonti, 3 Hostage Taker, 2 Scarab Gods, 1 Confiscation Coup, 2 to Rest, 2 Dive Down, 4 Fatal Push, 4 Chart of Course, 2 Cartouche of Ambition, 2 Vraska's Contempt, and it looks like 24 lands, including 8 swamps and 4 islands. The sideboard is 2 Deadeye Tracker, 4 Scrap Heap Scrounger, 2 Negate, 2 Moment of Craving, 2 Doomfall, an Hour of Glory, a 3rd Vraska's Contempt, and a River's Rebuke.
I'm very interested by this deck list for a few reasons. I don't think I've seen somebody try to build this deck this way.
So, I mean, this is like how the lists were at the very beginning.
They weren't playing Dive Down, were they?
Yeah, they were. They were playing at least a one of.
I don't remember that. Because I remember, I mean,
this was last format.
Oh, maybe I don't remember this. Do you remember this, Jamie?
I don't remember a lot of Dive Down. It might have been a one-off at some point, but I think
Jabberwocky was... Jabberwocky was playing one. I don't know that anyone has played two except in Pummeler style.
Yeah.
Sure.
I do remember Jabberwocky being on 4 Kitesail Freebooter, but I think this deck is interesting. I don't know how to give a ton of feedback for this one, so let's just start with what we love, which is what we're supposed to do. First of all, I do like blue-black midrange. I think that the mana is better than people give it credit for. A lot of people say the mana is actually horrendous. I don't think that's true. I think Chart of Course does a lot to fix that. That's the thing that I love about the deck. Anything stick out to you that you really love, Michael?
I like the shorter courses if you play straight blue-black. I'm interested in Freebooter. There are a lot of things I'm a little unsure of with this deck. I would be curious to hear thoughts as far as what you like and what you're looking at changing.
Yeah. Jaden, anything that stick out to this list that you particularly love?
I like that our decisions are going in the same direction. We're playing Freebooters, and we're playing Hostage Taker alongside them. Nobody else is playing Hostage Taker. You can't protect it, but we have Freebooter and Dive Down.
Yeah, and Duress. So it's lots of interaction that interacts with the spells in their hand specifically. Mm-hmm. Not the cards in their hand, but actually the spells in their hand.
Mm-hmm. I feel like this list is going to a lot of trouble to make Hostage Taker work, and I appreciate that we have put all these cards in to play that card.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that if there were things that I would change, I'm hesitant to change things in this list off the top of my head. I do feel like Freebooter at 4 is a lot, but kind of what Jadeen speaks to, which is, well, if my goal is to protect my Hostage Takers and my Glintsleeve Siphoners, then that actually makes a little bit of sense. But I do worry that there's not any Champion of Wits in this list. I would want at least 2 still.
I worry a little bit. When I talked about blue-black mana being terrible, it's mostly because you're trying to cast Gifted Aetherborn. Yes. My biggest issue with this list is that we're playing Gifted Aetherborn, and we've kind of gone so far in this direction. Like, when you start playing main deck Cartouche of Ambition, main deck Hostage Taker, like a lot of main deck Hostage Takers and a main deck Confiscation Coup, I think, plus like the 4 Fatal Pushes versus 2 Contempts, I think you start making it really hard to interact with anything that's like a slightly bigger mid-range deck than you, or especially like control decks. Like, I really think with this setup, your like blue-black matchup in the pre-board games is going to be pretty horrendous.
Yeah, and I actually don't know how much better it gets post-board, right? You have 2 Negates, 2 Doomfall, and that's kind of
you have to put in Scrap Heap Scrounger and Deadeye Tracker as well, I would imagine.
So I do think that you are boarding in Scrap Heap Scrounger, but I don't... So your bad cards are Cartouche of Ambition, you probably don't want Confiscation Coup.
You don't want Gifted Aetherborn.
You don't want Aetherborn. I don't know, maybe it actually does match up. Now that I'm counting, it actually might line up correctly.
Yeah, I see about 10 outs, roughly. I mean, if you're just being super lazy, right? Cartouche, right. Aetherborn, Hostage Takers at 9.
Yeah, and then the coup.
Sure, there you go, there's 10.
Yeah, so maybe I'm wrong on this. I mean, I'm not wrong that I worry about the matchup, but I might be wrong that it's not built in a way that it can try and do something. Any thoughts on that, Jadeen?
No, I think you guys nailed that one.
Okay. Where do we think that a deck like this stands? And let's specifically say where it stands compared to other blue-black mid-range decks.
I wonder, some of it is just that I don't have that much experience playing with these cards in this format. I would imagine Hostage Taker probably has to make your Sultai matchup less miserable than it otherwise is. But I still am not sure. I would imagine your mono-red matchup's pretty good, like main decking Cartouche of Ambition and Dive Down and stuff like that, plus Hostage Taker. But I worry about your mid-range matchups a little bit in comparison to something that is playing just more reactive spells and better reactive spells.
You probably mean specifically non-green mid-range decks, right?
Sure, like I mean mostly like the Mirror and Grixis.
Yeah, because I think that like Gifted Aetherborn is pretty good against the green mid-range decks, whereas against something like Grixis mid-range... Did I just say Grixis twice?
Against Grixis, yeah.
Right, yeah.
Against green, it's okay. Against Grixis, it's kind of not a card.
Yeah, I agree with that. Jadeen, any thoughts on that?
I worry that this deck just, like, draws the wrong card sometimes. Like, we've got these Duresses, these Dive Downs, these Cartouche of Ambitions. We lost Champion of Wits to fix our hands. We just have Chart of Courses, and we just have, like, a lot of cards that don't really do anything on their own. Like,
yeah.
What if you stare at, like, three land, freebooter, dive down, just, like, these cards that you need something to go right?
I think that if I were to make a change to this deck, it would be adding champion. Like, I think that it fixes that problem that JD's worrying about, at least to some degree.
I think there's also just no way you can convince me to play four Kitesail Freebooters in the main deck.
I agree with that. I think that it's probably...
I can imagine matchups where you want four, but there's no way that that's what I'm playing as a main deck configuration.
Yeah, the other thing I worry about in this list is that it's sacrificing too much power for synergy. Like, we're playing Dive Down. That was barely a limited card at times. Like, a lot of our cards are just really low power level, and we're trying to make up for it in synergy, and I'm just, like, not sure that it's completely there.
Right. Yeah. I think if you trimmed, like, a Kitesail and just cut the Aetherborns, you could... I mean, I don't think you can, like, really main deck Cartouche of Ambition either.
I agree with that. I think
you just start getting into territory where, like, you're so hedged, but you're sort of hedging in a lot of different directions. Like, I don't know that I want to play the main deck with Gifted Aetherborn and Kitesail Freebooter, because neither card is particularly powerful, like, just on its own. And they're going in such opposite directions that it's just awkward.
I don't want to play Gifted Aetherborn as my, like, nearly my best thing to hold a Cartouche of Ambition, and it already has lifelink. That's just unfortunate. The only thing better than it is Scarab God.
Yeah. That's our thoughts on the deck. I also want to just give a shout out to our patrons for, like, being willing to put their deck lists on the line. I know that, like, having thousands of people, like, listen to this can be nerve-wracking, but I actually think that it is interesting, good content, and I really appreciate our patrons for that. I think it's good for us because it makes us question our initial thoughts on something and dig deeper. So thank you to our patrons. I actually really appreciate it. Let's move on to Card of the Week. So, Jadine, our card of the week is Hedonis Climb, and I need to know how many of them I'm giving away.
What determines how many you're giving away?
How many you tell me? How many am I giving away? Between one and four.
I have to choose.
How many Hedonis Climb should you be playing?
Yeah, that's what we're asking.
Three. Okay, it's
we
three.
Are giving away three Hedonis Climb this week, for this one. it says hundreds. So, what makes this our card of the week? Well, first of all, Jadine's on the podcast, so that's a good reason to do it. And second, so I was a huge, huge, huge Snake player before this card came out, and I probably got like 1,000 messages of people asking me, what about this card, And I was like, I don't know, like, how good is it without Snake in play? Turns out it's fine, and I was wrong. But... Jadine, how does this card fit into the format?
It is the only card that lets you reliably go over the top of Scary God while playing a mid-range deck. It is the thing you can do that lets your opponent, like, defensively sit behind a Scarab God, and you can still win the game after that. It, like, gives you a weird kind of inevitability against the decks that are supposed to just be able to beat you.
Yeah. How much of a role does Bristling Hydra play into this?
Bristling Hydra is you can call it a two card combo if you want, but Bristling Hydra is the thing that, like, beats the control decks that are trying to rely on Vraska's Contempt, Fatal Push, whatever kind of removal spells to deal with you, and you're just like, well, you can't do that, and you also can't block it, and also I don't need anything else going on whatsoever, and I'm still going to be able to 14 you.
So, the next thing that we have on this card of the week is what decks are playing this card right now. And it is just one. It is just Snakes and Ladders. So, I'm actually going to switch the way that we do this. So, typically, we do the power rankings and then talk about what we play. There's no power rankings this week. So, I'd like to just go on to Deck of the Week and talk about Snakes and Ladders really quick. Before we talk about what we play and why. So, the first thing that I need to ask is, Jadine, did you name this deck?
Unfortunately, no. I popularized it after I, like, sent out a screenshot on Twitter of, like, some sweet Bristling Hydra kill, and people are like, Snakes and Ladders. I was like, that's the best thing I've ever heard in my life. I'm going to call it that from now on.
I do think that we missed the chance to call this Snakes on a Plane, or Snakes on a Pogo Stick, because ladders don't make you fly.
They make you climb over Scarab God. Mm. And I mean, you know, it's a true classic. It's a classic board game.
Isn't it?
It's both in different places.
It's probably true. I'm probably just thinking of the American name. Okay.
It's apparently a weird regional thing.
Yeah. There are so many of those. Let's talk about your list really quick, JD. Sure. We're going to use your 10th place list from the Classic. Is that okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. So we have 4 Walking Ballista, 4 Glint Sea Siphoner, 4 Servant of the Conduit, 4 Winding Constrictor, 4 J-Light Ranger, 4 Bristling Hydra, 2 Furtisker Hulk. Man, this is a Spencer deck. 2 Blossoming Defense, 2 Fatal Push, 3 Vraska's Contempt, 3 Hedonis Climb, 24 lands, 1 If Near Death lands, and 2 Hashibu Wastes, so that I think are really important, as well as the 2 Foul Orchards. We have 2 Duress, 1 Fatal Push, 2 A Girl's Bloodfast, 2 Essence Scatter, 2 Negate, 2 Cartouche of Ambition, 2 Thrashing Brontodon, and 2 Ravenous Chupacabra in the sideboard. So, let's actually let you lead this, Jadeen. So why don't you give us a simple summary of the deck really quick?
So it's a deck that basically plays the classic snake game of when you play Winding Constrictor, all of your cards are much better than their rate, and you probably win the game if the Winding Constrictor doesn't die. You have a little bit of removal to stop your opponent in some of the games where you need to make a tempo play or whatever, but you're always building towards this Hedonis Climb endgame where you can just like attack in the air for massive damage amounts that they can't actually do anything about. You get into these stalemates where they're sitting behind Gear Hulk plus Scarab God and like a couple of other things, and you just have like a board of creatures that can't attack through, but if you ever draw Hedonis Climb, the game ends on the spot, and you force them to be attacking you and to try and end the game.
Okay. What do you think are the major key cards that people should be thinking about when building and playing this deck?
Hedonis Climb is the best card in a lot of matchups.
Yeah.
The cards in this deck are pretty polarized across matchups, where like Walking Ballista is the best card against a lot of the weird tokens-y decks that are going on right now. All of the different, like the Vampires deck, just, you know, anything with a bunch of X1 creatures. There you're leaning on Walking Ballista and Gear Hulk in more of like a classic snake game with Hedonis Climb playing backup. And against the mid-range things, Hedonis Climb is your trump.
I mean, we talked a little bit about Bristling Hydra, right? And like, it is part of this combo that your deck has. You know, if you watch the GP, it seemed like some of the really standout cards were actually Glint Sleeve Siphoner and Gear Hulk when you were watching Aaron play the deck. Why don't you talk about those two cards really quick?
Yeah, Glint Sleeve Siphoner is, I mean, just the same thing that Glint Sleeve Siphoner has been doing forever. It's been very good in Snake from the beginning, whenever there's not a ton of opposing Walking Ballistas, and there's almost zero right now. So it draws attention away from Snake. That's another big thing that why this is a better Glint Sleeve Siphoner deck than the other, a Glint like blue-black mid-range, where like Siphoner is just about the only thing that's even worth killing. This deck has a ton of things that they need to kill, so something's going to stick, and you're going to get a lot of advantage out of whatever creature you ended up sticking.
Kind of to speak to that point, one thing that I think that this deck does a really good job of, and this is something that I was trying for, what was the last Standard GP I went to, Michael? Was it Phoenix, or was it
Denver? I think it was Portland.
Was it Portland?
It was one Portland, because I was playing Glint Sleeve Siphoner, but in a different pile.
Yeah. So one of the things that I think this deck does a really good job of is the fact that Servant of the Conduit, Glint Sleeve Siphoner, and Winding Constrictor are all must-kills in this deck. There were a lot of snake decks where like you didn't really care about Servant of the Conduit, and in this deck, it actually matters a lot.
Absolutely.
I have a couple of questions. Like, so when you're playing this, what are you most excited to sit down across from, and what matchups scare you a little bit more?
I think I'm mostly most excited to sit down against like any mid-range thing, for the most part, like the blue-black mid-range decks, the things that are just kind of trying to play this medium value game and win in the long game when you're just going to, like, Hedonis, and they don't have any interaction for Hedonis Climb, and you're just going to get across it. I like playing all of the really good walking list in matchups a lot. I like playing against vampires. Red's a little hairy, especially with this list, because Red's been on a decline, so there's a few concessions here that make it worse against Red, but for the most part, the deck definitely has a very good game against Red, and I don't mind sitting across from it. The scariest thing, a lot of the time for me, is actual blue-black control. Their best draws are, like, nearly unbeatable, and you just can't stick a threat or resolve a Hydra, and you end up crumbling.
I mean, that makes sense based on my experience with this deck as well.
You know, the one thing that I think that we should talk about here is where do you think this deck actually stands? I know on MTGO, last time I was looking, it was in the top three. So the deck has had a serious uptick.
It's gotten a lot more popular.
Yeah, it's completely taken the green-black versions of the deck out of the metagame.
I think it would be the best deck in the format if its mana was a little better. It stumbles a lot because of its mana, and that's like the last little bit I think it would need to get there. But it's very powerful, and I think it can be tuned to beat basically anything. If control was the only thing I had to beat, I would beat it. So yeah, I like this deck a lot. I think it's probably going to be tier one until Dominaria comes out, and maybe past that because there are a lot of good lands in Dominaria.
Yeah, this deck gets a lot of lands in Dominaria. So building this mana base is going to become a lot more interesting. It might turn into a cycle land. Oh my gosh, I can't talk. A cycle land like a check land mana base. Yeah, because like you don't have turn one plays very often, so it's very feasible. You can be like, well, I'll just play all of the cycle lands, play them on turn one. And then maybe you play an extra Fatal Push for the turns where you have double tap land. I think this mana base will actually get better.
Yeah, for sure.
Go ahead.
It's really interesting to just see sort of... I know that Bristling Hydra had fallen out of favor before Hedonis Climb, but if you haven't really seen... If you haven't had that happen to you or done it to someone yet, it's so uninteractive.
So
it's like there's just very little that anyone can do about it if it's happening.
So I played a game at the Classic where I set up Hydra Climb against a blue-black mid-range player, but I was kind of low on energy. I only had one activation, and they like end-step Gear Hulk, Flashback, Contempt to make me use the last energy. They're at 18, have one card in hand on my next turn, and I can only 14 them with this climb, and I have no energy, and I can like deploy some like medium threat against like a big board. I end up going for it, and I'm just going to 14 them, hope they don't draw removal, and 14 them again on the next turn. Because they have a board, it's like Gear Hulk plus Gifted Aetherborn plus a couple of other things. It's like a two-turn clock. So I just 14 them, they draw, and they just start posturing with their cards, and I'm just like, I promise to do it again, and they concede. And it was great.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, right? You get your shot. And if that doesn't go well for you, then you just lose.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
right. It's very powerful, and I think that when you're looking at like a reason to play a deck, the ability to sometimes play really uninteractive magic is really powerful.
It's a strong draw for sure.
Yeah, I personally really like what this deck has evolved into. I think that there are interesting flex slots. The Jadelight Ranger versus the number of Jadelight Rangers that you play versus playing Rishkar, the number of, you know, like, the number of Blossoming Defense, Fatal Push, like, the deck actually has more room than people give it credit for.
Agree.
To adjust, which is nice.
Mm-hmm. For sure. I mean, like, I could see metagames where you don't even play all the Hydras, where you max on Blossoming Defense instead, and just, like, there's, like, lots of things you could take it different ways.
Yeah, I agree. All right, so that is the deck of the week. However, before we wrap it up, any tips and tricks you want to give people?
Your mana is awful. Respect that. like, respect that in your mulligans. Like, you actually rarely want to cycle your fetid pools, like, especially early. You're like, I might flood. Blue sources are more important than you think, because you need them to activate climb, and if you get to a point in the mid-game where you're hoping to draw climb, you're going to need two blue sources to cast and activate it. So, like, you, it's not easy to get two blue sources in play in this deck a lot of the time. Your energy is really valuable. You end up needing it a lot off of Aether Hub for blue. Sometimes you have to, like, you don't often decline a draw on a Glintstone Siphoner, but you might make, you might not use Servant of the Conduit for mana because you need to instead.
I played Sultai Energy that was not the Hedonic Climb version of that GP we were talking about. Mm-hmm. I had two Bristling Hydras in my deck, and I was playing Servant of the Conduit. And one of the things that I found with the deck is, like, Servant is actually just, like, there to make, to, like, trade with something and then make my Glint Sleeves and my Hydras better a lot of the time. Sometimes it's a ramp spell, but a lot of times it's a, here's a ground thing to hold the ground while I use the energy in other ways. And I think that this deck does that a lot.
Yep, Servant plus Aether Hub into a turn 4 Hydra that's already protected from Vraska's Contempt on the ETBA trigger is, right, like, really important. It comes up a lot.
Yep.
I think specifically when talking about this deck, too, like, the lack of counter spells in anything but the control decks, like, the reason that Hydra is so difficult to deal with right now is that none of the mid-rangey decks are really playing
they're not
much
playing
of
Scatter
any
right now.
Magic. Like, no Scatters... I mean, maybe one Supreme Will and maybe a Commit Memory, and that's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're relying on threats like Gifted Aetherboard and Gonti to Death Touch through big, dumb ground things, and you just have to show them the backside of Hedonis Climb, and they get kind of sad about their plan.
Yep. Let's move on to our training grounds. So every week on the show, we like to talk about something that's going to make you better at Magic the Gathering. This week, we wanted to give our listeners a chance to ask Jaden questions. You know, we have a GP Top 8 competitor, SCG Premium writer on here, and we want to pick your brain. So, I sent these to you beforehand, but I'm just going to read them off, and we're going to kind of lightning round these. Is that okay?
You got it.
Okay. What is one of the most important things that the game of Magic the Gathering has provided you?
Friends, a social life. I started playing in college.
I think Handy's in our chat right now, watching this whole episode, so...
That's true.
I think that's true for everybody. Like, my best friends are all Magic players now.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's actually too cool, right? Like,
oh yeah, you get to travel to cool cities, hang out with friends that you don't get to see all the time in, like, exotic locales that are just different convention centers, but you dress it up in your head.
It rings way too true. All my friends who don't play Magic think it's really cool that I travel all the time, and I never quite have the heart to tell them that, like, man, I've been to so many, like, I think Donald would always quote the Goblin Guide flavor text, which is like, I've been to many places, I even remember some of them. It's so sadly true.
It's actually so funny. I think we do a good job of trying to, like, eat at the night, like, our people's favorite restaurants, and, like, we try and make trips out of it, but, like, sometimes it doesn't work, and, like, how was your week? Like, I'll come home from a trip, and my coworkers are like, oh, how was your weekend? How was your weekend in wherever? How was your weekend in San Jose? It was great. I cashed the GP. I got some money. They're like, yeah, but how was San Jose? I was like, oh, I have no idea.
I tell stories about tournaments, and I'm like, I just have no idea where they are. Like, I'm like, it was the one, I don't remember.
Or it cost $45, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the one where I spent $20 on food at this medium burger place, and the convention center water was $4 instead of $3.50, and I was kind of upset.
So, to be fair, at Pro Tour Origins, it was really easy to remember because it was in Vancouver during the hottest summer of Vancouver's history, and a lot of places in Vancouver don't have AC because they don't need it usually. And it was, like, the worst sleeping experience I've ever had at a tournament, and it was also my first Pro Tour, so I remember it vividly.
Good times.
what, speaking of those good times, what is your most treasured MTG moment?
Let's see. So, on the plane to Hawaii for Pro Tour Cons of Tarkir, that was my first Pro Tour, and the song Long Live by Taylor Swift came on, and it's like, the lyrics are only like, remember this moment or something, and I was like, whew. It was like just a lot of feelings all of a sudden, something I've been working for so long, and just like, this is fantastic. I'm just like flying on a plane. Somebody else bought me halfway across the world to go sit in a convention center. By the way, the Hawaiian Convention Center is nice.
Oh yeah, I've heard it's very
so
nice.
Nice. Yeah.
It's the best convention center by miles. It's
like
there's like a garden
area,
up on the second floor or something. You just like can walk out on the roof and there's like palm trees. Okay. Anyway, that moment was just like, this is great.
Okay. What is your process? What is your process for writing such great articles?
I think Magic's fascinating. Like, that's the reason I still play. I think it's the reason why everyone plays. So whenever I like start thinking about something and trying to solve another problem, I just like try and like write down what I'm thinking about and what my theories are, and then like when it comes time to write, I just have like a list of the things I've been thinking about. If I write about the things that interest me, hopefully it'll interest somebody else. I try not to write about topics that don't interest me. Like, I don't write a lot of articles about three decks that are well positioned in the format this second, because that's not the kind of thing I think about all the time. And I try to write the articles I would want to read, and
this is
people
so
seem to like it.
This is like, I want everybody to know that Jadine just gave like the best advice for anyone looking to create Magic content. People know when you're not excited about a topic, or when you're not having fun with a topic, or when the topic doesn't interest you, because it's very, like, they can tell. And so, like the reason that constructive criticism exists is because nothing like this show existed when I started it. And then when I started it, like, three other podcasts came up at the same time, because we all wanted this type of content. This, like, let's focus on constructed, let's get better at the game. And, you know, when you read an article by Jadine, you can hear her excitement through those words. And it makes the article stand out to you more. The reason people love Frank Karsten's math articles is because Frank Karsten loves math and talks about it in a way that's exciting.
Absolutely. Like, math isn't a particularly interesting topic. It's certainly not a particularly loved topic. And like, Frank Karsten's articles are fantastic because he enjoys what he's doing.
Yeah, I yes.
It probably applies just even beyond writing, right? Like, I mean, beyond content creation, like, it's just hard to be engaged and give your best if you're not at least like mostly pumped up about what you're doing, right?
Yeah.
Good. Absolutely.
Great advice, Jadine. That was I really appreciated that. This next question has to be personal. What's your favorite hat?
Beanies. Beanies.
Oh,
are
you don't have a favorite beanie, it's just beanies at large?
I have a favorite beanie right now, but it goes in and out, like it'll just change. But like, I've never met a beanie I didn't like.
Somebody make a shirt. What were the most important lessons you learned that helped you level up your game?
So the moment that sticks out in my head is a match I played at an Open years and years and years ago. It was the really good constructed format, Jund Innistrad, I think, where the Jund deck was like this Farseek deck that was absurd when it Farseeked and was not that good when it didn't. And I was playing something else. I wasn't particularly good at Magic at the time. I was playing like some Naya midrange deck that was mostly not a real deck. But my plan against the Jund deck was like really I was like an aggressive deck with like Loxodon Smiter and basically like a weird kind of zoo-ish deck in Standard. And against Jund, I sat in to just, like, Thundermaw Hellkites and Zealous Conscripts, and my entire plan was to let them kill all my stuff at sorcery speed, which was, like, the limitation on their removal, and just, like, five them four times from turns 5 through 7 or something to win the game. So, I keep this hand that is, like, full of all of the fives I need, and it's, like, three land, and I'm on the play or something, and, like, I need to draw some lands, and, like, I don't. And they, but my hand is so good. They play, like, a Scavenging Ooze, and I just play this Loxodon Smiter out, because it's turn three, and I have nothing else to do. And they end up killing it, and then eating it with an ooze, and I lose the race, because my, because their three power ooze clocked me in time before, like, I draw out of it and start fiving them, and I'm, like, a turn short because their ooze was three power instead of two. And there was just, like, in the picture of my overall strategy, there's no reason to play that smiter on that turn. I can just hold it because it's not actually doing anything. I know the Jund deck is going to kill it because that's what the Jund deck does, and they were threat light. So I just, like, sat at my computer for, like, an hour just, like, is there actually a way I could have not played that Loxodon Smiter? I had nothing else to do with my mana. Is that really a thing? And that was just kind of the moment where I was like, wow, there's a lot of magic. I don't know if that was the right play. I don't know if this is like a hindsight thing, but I want to find out. And I kept working at finding out.
Those are the kind of things that'll drive you crazy, so be careful.
This was years ago. It worked out.
It sounds like you still remember it pretty vividly, though.
That's true. I do remember it.
What is your favorite city to visit and why?
Baltimore, because the convention... it's not the convention center. The pier in Baltimore is really nice. Like, it's actually near the convention center, so you'll actually go. It's right outside. It's so pretty at night. And you can just, like, sit at the water, and there's, like, not actually a lot of people out there, and it's just, like, really pretty.
All right. I all of mine are food related, so clearly I have a problem, or a solution to something. What is your favorite format? It has to be modern, right?
It's actually not. I actually don't like modern that much.
I'm so proud of you. I was so worried that you were like, I was like looking at every, basically all of the deck lists that people have for you, and I was like, are Jadeen and I the same person? Like, we play literally the same decks. But also, we both seem to do really well in Modern. And I was going to ask, do you actually like it? Or is it just, like, you happen to like mid-range decks, and that's a format that mid-range is really good in?
Yeah, I like mid-range a lot. It's definitely my favorite, like, kind of macro archetype to play. And I feel like, I wasn't good at Modern. I'm better now. But I spent a lot of 2016 just learning Modern, and not really doing much else in Magic, but yeah, like, I did not like the last several months before the unbannings in Modern very much, where, like, all my decks kind of sucked and I didn't want to play anything else, but I like it a lot more now that Bloodbraid's legal. But my favorite format has always been Standard. Like, even bad Standards I like a lot. I just like smaller card pools, having more of an idea of what they're going to do, and being able to get really, like, really into the fine details where you start playing, like, some bad cards to win.
Yeah. You actually top 16 with one of the hardest decks in the history of Standard to play, but you're not playing one of the key cards. And I was going to bring it up. So you have a top 16 with Jeskai Tokens in Standard, but you're actually not playing Jeskai Ascendancy. Do you remember this?
Not really. What tournament was it?
You took 15th place at a Columbus Open in 2015. This is actually close to the start of this podcast. And we actually had, for a long time on the show, talked about how Jeskai Tokens at large was, like, the best deck in Standard, but it actually was impossible to play. Like, there were actually too many decisions per game for you to make the correct ones.
Yeah, Jeskai Tokens was really hard.
So, I like that you said Standard's your favorite, because it's like, you, just looking over your results, you try everything in Standard.
Yeah, I try a little bit of everything, erring towards the mid-range stuff, but, you know, I'll go where it takes me.
Michael, what were you going to say?
I was just saying that I think one of the things that I like about Standard compared to Modern is so rarely are you playing matchups where, just in, like, a fundamental way, the deck you're playing against either can't beat you or can't hope to beat you.
Yeah.
Like, so much of Modern sometimes comes down to just your matchups, and I feel like that's so rarely the case in Standard. It's also just because there are less decks, right? I mean, less decks, less good sideboard cards. Just having functions of a smaller card pool.
Yeah, 80-20 matchups offend me. Like, I don't...
Well, it's just not fun, right? I mean, it's not rewarding to win them, and it's not fun to play a match where your opponent could literally play with their eyes closed and just play cards at random and destroy you.
Yeah, like, when I play Jund against Tron, for instance, I feel like I'm having a lot more fun than my Tron opponent, because I am actually enjoying trying to, like, turn my 20%er into, like, a 30%er. But, like...
There's no way it's fun for them, right?
Yeah, they just are, like, doing things by rote, and then, like, they can either do what they're expected to do, or they can lose to Jund, and that just doesn't feel good for them. So, like...
And by the same token, I mean, it's frustrating if you spend a lot of time working on a list for an event, you're happy with it, and then you play Tron, you know, three times in the first six rounds, and you're just done. Yeah. Right? I mean, it's just hard not to feel Phoenix. Sort of...
Literally just happened to me. I was like, I sat down and put in a guy. He was playing Tron. Three games later, he goes, yeah, and I'm like, I'm really sorry that, like, you had to play this matchup, and I'm like, it's modern, like... This, like, you literally have to sign up for this. Like, I knew that my matchup against Tron was bad, that Tron is a very good deck, and, like, I rolled the dice to dodge it, because, like, I wanted to play Jund. And I don't think that you have those problems in Standard. Like, Control is supposed to, like, be pretty good against mid-range, but, like, I'm usually really happy with my mid-range Control games in Standard. Mm-hmm. And I think that it just has to do with the fact that, like, the matchup doesn't really get better than, like, 65-70% in Standard. It just doesn't happen.
I agree completely. Like, Standard matchups are capped at, like, 65-35 or something, and it just doesn't get more lopsided than that, and that's much more fun for me.
Yeah.
Right. And I mean, especially, it's frustrating if you feel like you've done everything you can to sort of edge a matchup in your favor, and, you know, you get Ulamogged off the top or whatever. Like, that kind of stuff just happens so much less in Standard. Right.
Yeah. I have learned to appreciate Modern a lot more recently and just kind of, like, enjoy it for what it is, but Standard will always be my favorite.
Yeah. I don't know, did we talk about that Ponza match that I played, or was that just on Twitter, about the hand that I kept, Michael?
Oh, yeah, no, we did talk about this.
Oh, it was on the podcast? Yeah, like, that kind of stuff just doesn't happen in Standard. It's like, how often do you get to, like, literally take the best card out of your opponent's hand and then lose two turns later in Standard?
I mean, hopefully not. You know.
The match at the Invitational in the top four, I played against Brad Nelson, where I Inquisitioned him. I'm on Jund versus Death Shadow. Inquisition turn one enables his turn two kill, because I put a card in the yard for Become Immense, and there was nothing I could do about
it. It's like, well, I have to take something.
Yeah, unfortunately. It's not a May. That was rough.
So what is your process for testing events is our next question.
It depends a lot on the format. Like, we're talking about Modern, it's like, Modern, I'm more concerned about, like, my deck, because, like, just what, like, if people are really excited about humans right now, which has been the case, you know, sometime recently, I'll, like, make sure that my humans matchup is okay, but I'll kind of just, like, play a lot of games with the deck I want to play and make sure that my 75 cards are working as intended, because... what am I going to do? Test every matchup? I don't have a year of my life to devote to this tournament. In Standard and other things, I'll make sure that I play, you know, the relevant matchups, because there's a manageable amount of them, and think more about, like, larger picture concerns, like the metagame and having good matchups across the board or whatever, but it's just too much for me to think about in Modern.
I think that's really good advice. I think that, like, when it comes to Modern... focusing on you and, like, what you want to beat. You know what decks are in Modern. Like, it's... you can just go look. And being happy with, like, where you're at is what's really important.
Yeah, I'd just like to add that, like, if that involves, like, deciding that your favorite deck isn't a good choice, you can usually do that relatively quickly, too. And a lot of the Modern decks that might be well-positioned at any given time, like... there are often options that are less challenging than... it's not like every deck is incredibly difficult to play.
And yeah.
I think being a little bit comfortable with not just, like, well, I'm a Jund player, so I play Jund, or... yeah. If you have access to a card pool, I think being a little bit flexible, even if it's only two or three decks that you're happy with, it gives you much more ability to feel like you have agency over how your tournament is going.
I think so too, and I think that kind of to build on Jadine's point and your point, I think that people think that they need to play like hundreds of matches with their modern deck to gain that like knowing your deck edge. I don't think it's actually that many. I think it's literally just like playing enough matches that you understand interactions that could happen in the modern game more so than every single matchup against every single deck.
Right. I mean, the secret is no matter how much you play Jund, right? Like if you play against something really bizarre, the games are still going to be different than what you've experienced.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like when you play against Bogles for the first time with like any deck, like you're going to be at kind of a disadvantage, or like whatever fringe deck you Bogles probably isn't even fringe right now, but like Living End, you know, you play against it for the first time, you're not sure what's going on, you're probably going to lose. You were on whatever deck, and then you switch a couple weeks later and play it again, and you get to translate a lot of what you picked up in that match. Kind of just like general modern experience matters a lot. You don't need to replay every matchup with every deck. You can kind of figure out what you've been doing if you've been playing modern a lot. So yeah, just like a lot of modern experience helps you a lot, helps you switch decks. I agree that, like, I think the ideal place in modern to be is, like, two or three decks that you're very comfortable with and could pick up at a drop of a hat if you think they're the right deck at the time.
The next question that we have is, what do you think of the current modern metagame? You kind of mentioned that you didn't like it before the banning, before the unbannings. What do you think of it now?
I like it a lot right now. You don't have to, like, play this weird tension act. I just found Death Shadow play patterns kind of unfun, like worrying about my life total and how low can I go, and just like I didn't really want to play Limbo while I was trying to play Magic, so I didn't particularly enjoy that. But now that I can play like a more classic mid-range deck and feel good about myself, I'm like I like it a lot more. Like mid-range feels like it is in a fine place right now, and that's about all I ask for.
Yeah, I know a lot of people like want the Tronlands banned, and I actually like having a natural predator to decks like Jund and Abzan, because in a format like Modern where the control decks just aren't as good as they could be in something like Legacy, and even in Standard, right? I would honestly worry that if Tron didn't exist. Like I think that having that balance of like you can't play nonsense because of Jund, but also you can't just forget that Ponza and Tron exist. I think that that's good. I like it when Jund is the best deck and when Tron is very good, because it gives ramp is a good thing for Magic, I think.
I agree for the most part. I like when Tron is too good, it feels miserable, but I don't think that's the case right now.
If I won the lottery, I might buy all there is as towers in the world just to burn them. I like the Seance guy, but like a lot more hardcore.
I mean,
that's just throwing it out there. Yeah.
That's an interesting take, Michael. That's an interesting take. Jadine, what do you think about the Black Red Hollow One deck? And what are the ins and outs of your matchup as a jump player?
I think the Black Red Hollow One deck is sweet, just that it exists, that there's this like deck where you're just like, well, I'm going to play Burning Inquiry and the odds are it's going to work out for me, but I don't know what the game's going to look like afterwards. It's going to be so radically different. I don't like that it's yet another card in Burning Inquiry as a card, for a little tangent, that it's another card in Modern that punishes mulliganing. Jund existing already punishes mulliganing enough, and I don't like that people are like, we're just getting to the point where you're just like, my 7 might work, and they might Thoughtseize me and or Burning Inquiry me, so I guess I keep. I don't love that, but in general, I think the Black-Red Hollow deck is very cool. The matchup with Jund, I think the big thing is that you can't let yourself, as the Jund player, you can't let yourself take too much damage from the early creatures. You have to, like, be ready to Fatal Push the Flameblade Adept, and you're gonna, like, the games you win typically play out that they do something aggressive early and you kill it, and then they start slamming, you know, Hollow Ones and Gurmag Anglers, and like your answers to those spells are expensive and they get to play them early, so you have to be able to take like 12-ish damage from those cards before you can, like, set up with Lilianas and Goyfs or things to block, so you can't take too much damage from the rest of it, because those are the things you're going to be struggling with. And then they're always going to be able to, like, 2 you with a Flame Wake, a Phoenix in the mid-game or whatever, and, like, you just can't.
What is your Dreadbore, Terminate, Fatal Push, Maelstrom Pulse package look like right now?
So at the last time the deck I played at the Open was 3 Fatal Push, 2 Maelstrom Pulse, and a Terminate in the board.
Okay.
I've made a pretty conscious decision to be, like, weaker against Gurmag Anglers and Reality Smashers of the world for the most part.
Yeah. I went the opposite direction. I don't hate one push, but I typically... here's my thing, is that I actually think Abrupt Decay is the, like, kind of a polarizing card, in that you either want an Abrupt Decay or a Maelstrom Pulse as the second pulse. And then I have a hard time not playing a Dreadbore or a Terminate in the main deck. So... But I think that what you said, which is, like, that conscious decision, is kind of where it comes into play.
Mm-hmm. I think that's reasonable. If you're, like, not willing to lose to Eldrazi Tron and Hollowhorn, like, you definitely need to play 1-2 Terminate and just, like, things that can answer those cards.
What is the strongest archetype in Team Unified Modern, and which combinations would you take to a GP?
This is a hard question, because Team Unified Modern just, like,
Is the worst format in existence?
It is the worst format in existence.
So I've only played Team Unified Modern once, and I would bet a lot of money that if you haven't read my Twitter, you would not be able to guess what our lineup was. We played... this was Grand Prix San Antonio last year?
Yeah, okay, I played that one too. I'm curious.
Alright, I played Jund. In, like, the era where Jund wasn't playable, and everybody was playing Jund Shadow still, before Grixis Shadow really took off.
Right, right.
I had a teammate on Eggs, and I had a teammate on Kithkin, with the Chroma enchantment that gives your creatures +1/+1 for each white mana in their casting cost.
Oh man, that's so sweet.
So the thing about this Grand Prix was that some of my college friends moved to Texas and really wanted me to play with them. So they flew me out, and we played a tournament, and those decks were unplayable. But it was a fun tournament.
It also did let you play Jund at a team Grand Prix, which is not that easy to do.
Mm-hmm. And I got to see my Kithkin friend beat a Jund Shadow player by boarding into 4 Devout Lightcaster, and that was a nice experience.
We played ad nauseum Bant Eldrazi and Jund Deathshadow, so, mm-hmm. You know, less exciting.
Yeah, the thing about Team Unified Modern is that, like, the restrictions are so minimal. Like, you can play, there's so many decks in Modern, they don't overlap that much. You can play, like, most 3 deck combinations that you, like, want to.
I think the reason that it's
so... It forces you into 2 pretty linear decks.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think the reason that's bad is because it forces you to pick from the type of decks you want to play, not the decks you want to play. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's reasonable.
I think that the other problem is that, like, seeding is random for the most part, but you also pick it.
Mm-hmm.
And in, like, Team Unified Modern, it's like this feel-bad moment that shouldn't exist. It's like, why did our seat C line up with their seat C? Why wasn't that seat A? And it's like,
oh yeah, so you're like...
you can't control it, but also it sucks.
That was the
experience we had. We had Alex playing against Burn like 8 times in 14 rounds with Jund Deathshadow instead of Ad Nauseam, and like it was just one of those things where you're like, I mean, it's not like Burn is an awful, awful matchup, but man, I feel like if we just flipped seats, we would have been favored against, like, every single one of these teams.
It's like, you can't control it, and it, like, it's not, like, a mistake you made, but it's also like, oh, that sucks. Like,
yeah.
I don't
know. Yeah, exactly.
Whereas if it, like, Team Unified Standard is, like, you get to play, like, there's, like, 2 choices of 3 decks that you can play, and, like, the seats don't really matter because it's standard. I don't know. I just think that's a... I don't know that I like unified
format. Team unified standard just feels pointless. Like, we all play the same three decks, but we're on teams for some reason. Why? Just play an individual format. It's fine.
Gideon, where do you see Jace and Blood Raid Elf going next in the format?
I think Blood Raid Elf is, like... I won't say that it's at its stable point, but it's, like, we're getting close. There might be a few more Bloodbraid decks we haven't found yet, but I think, like, Jund, Hanza, and then, like, the Eldrazi, the green-red Eldrazi deck. I feel like we're getting close to the Bloodbraid Elf things. Maybe there'll be a sweet Traverse thing that we haven't, like, found yet. I haven't been too excited by all the Traverse things that we're doing with Bloodbraid Elf yet, but maybe we'll find something. Jace, on the other hand, like, there's got to be something, right? Like, we haven't found it yet, but, like, something has to work out for Jace.
That Bant deck actually looks super cool. Like, like, that's the direction I think that Jace gets pushed in.
Yeah, I agree. Something that isn't jamming into Jeskai.
Yeah, exactly. Something that's not playing in a deck that was already bad. you can be open and honest. It's fine, Jace. So those are the questions from our listeners. I just want to say thank you. We have people that love your Snakes and Ladders deck, that read your articles. I mean, obviously one of the questions was literally, how do you write such great articles? So our listeners love you and we appreciate you coming on. So thank you for that.
Absolutely. It's been fun.
Let's go on to kind of the end of the podcast. Just want to quickly mention our next Patreon goal, which is a Pro Tour exclusive episode. So basically, every Pro Tour, you would do an exclusive episode for patrons before, and so we'll do a before and after. I think is
this
what we decided.
You can hear about what I'm excited and then what I'm sad. So good.
Michael, I don't know how many times we have to tell you. You just have to win a Pro Tour to get Platinum. It's not that hard.
That's true. Four people
It sounds so easy when you put it like that.
But yeah, so we'll do... we're actually really close. Like $80 away from it. So yeah, that's our next goal. We'll get a Patreon-exclusive Pro Tour episode every Pro Tour. You can find us at SpencerH on Twitter from me. Michael is MagicMikeMTG, which is the best Twitter handle. You can find Mason and Mason E. Clark. Jaden, I actually don't have your Twitter handle memorized. I'm so sorry.
Nice. Someone knows.
Did you say that? Can they hear you? So you're just saying things in our ear. The quiet fish, is that correct?
Yes, that's right. This
is so awkward. You can find the podcast at CCMDG. You can find us every week on mtgcast.com, constructorcriticism.com, and Fusion Gaming and the Mana Base. You can join the conversation in our Discord as well as Constructive Criticism family. If you're Patreon $5 or more, you get access to the Constructive Critics group. You can join the clan by messaging me at Spencer13Dev on MTGO. You can message Quinn at Earthstripe, that's URTHESTYRPE. And you can tweet at us with hashtag Would That Be Good. Hashtag Would That Be Good is our Twitter outreach program. If you tweet it, Mason will read it. So Mason, why don't you get your time in the sun here and start us off.
Adrian tweets, listening to Paramore for the past 2 hours while practicing Sealed has me neck deep in my feels, feeling deep appreciation for Colossal Dreadmaw. Hashtag Would That Be Good. I think Moto agrees. It sorts it with the Mythic Rares now.
We did a podcast last week.
The problem is you're practicing Sealed. I would like try to read about Sealed, but practicing Sealed too much is honestly depressing. I would avoid it.
Yeah,
so I like playing Sealed.
This is the worst advice that anyone's ever given on this podcast, and you should just ignore Michael.
Trying to play a ton of Sealed pools.
You're wrong. All right, let's move
depressing.
On.
Don't do it.
You're very wrong.
Jaden, hang on. I want to ask Jaden about Paramore. Where do you stand on Paramore? Because I found out you love Taylor, which was my question I was going to ask. Or at least listen. So, where are you on Paramore?
With
your heart, Jaden.
Here's my weakness. I don't know a lot of music.
Oh, no.
So, I think I know that Paramore is some band.
It's a pop punk band. You've probably heard the song Crush, Crush, Crush.
Probably, yeah.
So hang on. Do you like Taylor Swift, or are you just randomly listening to Taylor Swift?
No. I love Taylor Swift. I know Taylor. I mean, not personally, but like I know who she is and her music.
I knew I liked your writing for more than just how good it was.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
All right. Spencer tweets. Oh, wait. This has Infinity War spoilers. We're just going to skip it. All right. Jared Poole tweets.
Hold on. I did tweet this.
Well, if you didn't tweet it, why is it coming from your Twitter handle?
Because my wife literally stole with my laptop. I mean, I'm pretty sure she swore at you that night.
Yeah, she did. She was mean to me for no reason. I got assaulted verbally, but it's fine. It happens from time to time.
Little song for getting the time today. This is Beck Dreams. I don't know this song.
I don't like Beck. Hot take.
The wife had taken her first steps into playing MTG. She decided to play Commander. Hashtag would it be good? No, that's the wrong way to start, man.
You forgot her commander. The commander.
I don't care.
maybe someone at home cares. Maybe someone at home was like, my wife's also.
You think somebody listening to this podcast cares about Commander?
Yes.
Andy is a constructed format.
Seven people. Name seven people.
Ooh, that's a hot take.
We're more likely to get a Commander Pro Tour than a Sealed Pro Tour at this rate.
That's not true.
Oh, it's totally true. 1v1 Commander's coming. You just wait. There's a couple more years.
Also, Emma says that she and you have sang Paramore together, Jadeen.
Like, what do you want me to say? That's probably true.
The song I'm Still Into You, that's another classic Paramore song.
Upside of going 1-2 drop of the PBDQ means that I finally got to try out MTG Arena because I got my code this morning and won my first game. Not too shabby overall. Hashtag will be good. Arena's great. I don't know what people are complaining. The format sucks, but the format sucked before the wait. Like, the like hyper sealed weird 2-set format wasn't good either. It's not like this for like we're playing block constructed. There's a reason block constructed doesn't exist anymore. I don't know what to tell you guys. People hate it because the format sucks, but the format just sucks.
Jadeen, have you got to play Arena yet?
Yeah, I'm in the beta or whatever. I don't really.
It's not. It doesn't much. Help. It doesn't help us yet, right? Once standard draft is in there, then it's like. But people are like, this format sucks, and it's like, yeah, because it's not a real format.
Yeah, I like probably as soon as like I mean honestly like as soon as I can work on an account or whatever, I'll probably play a lot, but like. When they're just done wiping it or whatever, but until then, I'll just not play a non-existent format.
Awesome. All right, Spencer tweets, what should I drink during CCMTG tonight? And the winner was Whiskey Sour?
Mason, what is in a Whiskey Sour?
All right, Whiskey?
Nice. Good start.
That's a good start. That's a good start.
I'm going to guess a lemon, because that's the most sour thing I could think of that would go with whiskey.
It is not a lemon.
Is it multiple lemons?
It is lemon juice.
Mmm, power.
What else do you think is in it?
Ice.
That's true.
Syrup, and egg white.
If you make it with egg white, you can make it with egg white. Are you talking about simple syrup? I make it with a sugar cube. I actually don't use simple syrup.
Okay.
Same thing, but yeah.
I don't drink alcohol.
I mean, I googled whiskey sour ingredients, and you know.
Oh, you cheated! You cheat the cheats up in there.
I mean,
I did make the margarita too because they were tied at one point, so we drink both.
Smart.
Well, it was starting before the poll ended. I messed up the poll. All right, so I'm gonna paraphrase this whole thing because I think that I was being very kind, and I just want opinions. So Andrew tweets.
I'll mute my mic.
Getting really bleepin' frustrated that I can't figure this bleepin' out. And I responded with a video of how to tie your shoes. And I said, I got you, fam. Hashtag would that be good. And Andrew says, not amusing. And I said, I'm still laughing. And Andrew said, glad someone is. I just want to be clear. One, was I trying to be helpful? Two, and was it funny?
Was it implied that they were trying to tie a shoe and couldn't?
No, there was no reference to what they were frustrated about, so I just assumed.
So the first one is definitely no, you weren't trying to be helpful.
that's probably true.
Yeah.
What about the second one, Jadeen? Was
what
it
was
funny?
The second question again?
Was
stuck.
It funny?
Was it funny?
Yes.
People have different senses of humor. I'm not going to judge you for...
That's a no, Spencer.
Well, let it be known that Michael and Mason laughed hysterically.
I'm pretty juvenile. I am pretty juvenile.
It was pretty good too watching the video, because she clearly has like a series of videos that she does to help people with their kids, and she was very helpful in her video.
See, that's a good example of trying to be helpful, making a video on how to tie your shoes.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Like,
Spencer,
if
you'd made a video for Andrew about how to tie your shoes, right, maybe then he would have.
I will make a video.
I still don't think that would have been helpful, but I do think it might have been funny.
To be clear, he has not stated that he wasn't trying to tie his shoes.
Yeah, maybe he wasn't amused because of how easy it looked in the video.
Unlikely, but possible.
To be fair, though, Andrew, if something's bothering you and I can help you out in any way, please let me know. You know, like, I'm here for you, bud.
Yeah, Spencer can tie his shoes and he can make a video of it. This time. The other video wasn't gonna
I was being serious. Thank you so much, Jaden, for coming on.
Thanks for
giving us a new snake deck to play with. All of us snake lovers really appreciate it. Means a lot.
Absolutely, yeah. What I do.
Yeah. All right, thanks everybody for listening, and we'll see you guys all next week. Magic.